If your right eye offends you, pluck it out. If your right hand offends you, cut it off. If someone forces you to go with them 1 mile, go with them too. What? What did Jesus mean with those words from the Sermon on the Mount? Let's find out. I'm Dr. Fred DeRuvo, and you're listening to Study, Grow, Know. Welcome to Study, Grow, Know here on AM 950 KHI, the voice of the foothills, with your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Good afternoon. Thank you for joining me at my new time slot here on Study, Grow, Know every Saturday at noon here on 950 AM KHI. Thanks again. You know, when people think of Christians, we're supposed to turn the other cheek. Christians are seen as someone who will turn the other cheek, go the extra mile, and a whole lot more. And to the world, the Christian is really seen as a doormat, honestly, for the world and anyone who would like to walk all over us. Where does the world get this idea? Is it true? Is it accurate? Well, most people who are familiar with any of these sayings know that, I mean, to some degree at least, they come from the Bible. Turn the other cheek, go the extra mile, and specifically, they come from the Sermon on the Mount, as recorded in the Gospel of Matthew, chapters 5 through 7, and taught by Jesus himself. Now, I'd like to take a few aspects of the Sermon on the Mount in our show today, and the parts that people are most familiar with, and discuss them. I mean, does Jesus really mean, for instance, that if someone slaps me on the cheek, I need to turn to him the other cheek? Does he really mean that? Well, as we read through the Sermon on the Mount, it becomes clear, or at least it should become clear, that Jesus often uses hyperbole and exaggeration to make some of his points. Now, for instance, in Matthew chapter 5, verses 29 through 30, Jesus says these two startling statements. I'm not going to read verse 28 at this point. I want to start right with verse 29 and 30. Quote, "If your right eye offends you, pluck it out and cast it from you. For it is profitable for you that one of your members should perish, and not that your whole body should be cast into hell. And if your right hand offends you, cut it off, cast it from thee. For it is profitable for you that one of your members should perish, and not that your whole body should be cast into hell," unquote. Well, at first glance, it certainly seems as though Jesus is saying that we should literally pluck out our eyes or cut off our hand if those things cause us to sin. In other words, if we have a problem with lust, for instance, and that could be man lusting after a woman, it could be lusting after a car, it could be lusting after a house, it could be lusting after someone else's job. Whatever the lust happens to be, it appears as though Jesus is saying, get rid of your eyes and that will take care of the problem. But is he? No. No, he's not. Because we know that even if we had no eyes, we could still lust. It would still be possible to lust. So eliminating our eyes does not eliminate the problem, because the lust occurs in our mind's eye. I don't need to see a physical woman in front of me to lust after a woman. I can simply conjure up a picture of a beautiful woman in my mind, and that's lust. If it is lust, that's where it could begin, in my mind's eye. I don't need physical eyes to do that. By the same token, if a person, for instance, has a problem with shoplifting, would cutting off one or even both hands solve the problem of their kleptomania? No. It might make it more difficult for them to steal things, but cutting off your hands would not eradicate the problem. The desire to shoplift begins in the same place that the desire to lust begins, and that is in the mind's eye. So if Jesus is not saying, for instance, that we should actually dismember ourselves, what is he saying? Fair question. Well, first of all, it's important to know that Jesus was making very critical points, and he was using hyperbole not only to get the crowd's attention, but to make the statement that they would be able to remember. Now, the fifth chapter of Matthew starts off with the following words, quote, And seeing the multitudes, he went up into the mountain. And when he was set, his disciples came to him, and he opened his mouth, and he taught them, saying, unquote. Now, because of the crowds that had followed Jesus, or gathered around him, he used the opportunity to teach them. Never wanting to waste an opportunity, he used this opportunity to teach the crowds, and he taught them by using hyperbole and exaggeration, because those types of things tend to stick with people. In fact, not only was it used in Christ's day, but we use the same kind of thing today in our conversation all the time. It's not unusual. For instance, if I met some friends at a restaurant and I said to them as I sat down, "Man, I am so hungry, I could eat a horse." Now, my friends would understand exactly what I meant by that statement. They would not be expecting me to order a horse from the menu. They would understand me to be saying, "Man, am I hungry. I plan on eating a lot of food." That's hyperbole. No one sits there and says, "Wow, Fred's going to order a horse off the menu." No, it doesn't work like that. We understand hyperbole, and we understand its literal meaning. That's what we're looking for. So what then is Jesus saying? Well, it should be clear that Jesus is saying that sometimes drastic measures are need to be undertaken to get rid of problem areas in our life. What he's really saying is that surgery needs to take place, but he is not talking about the physical realm. He is talking about the spiritual realm. In other words, if I am going to overcome the problems that keep me out of heaven, spiritual surgery needs to be accomplished. And we talked about that before in John chapter 3, when we talked about the narrative in which Jesus is speaking with Nicodemus, who was a Pharisee, and he explained to him that in order to receive salvation, in order to see heaven, a person must be born again. That's the spiritual transaction. And Jesus is basically saying the same thing here, but he's saying it in a different way. He is getting the crowd's attention, and he says to them, "Look, there's some drastic stuff that needs to happen. And it's like if you were to pluck out your eye. It's like if you were to cut off your hand, except it has to happen in the spiritual realm." And further, if we go to the verse just before verse 29, we can prove that this is what he's saying. He leads this off in verse 28 by saying, "But I say to you, whoever looks on a woman to lust after her has already committed adultery with her in his heart." Okay, here we go. Then verse 29 says, "If your right eye offends you, pluck it out. If your right hand offends you, cut it off." Well, but let's look what he's saying in verse 28. He says, "Look, guys, specifically, if you look at a woman and you are looking at her and you wind up lusting after that woman, as far as God is concerned, you have already committed adultery with her. You've played that image in your mind. Plucking out your eyeball is going to do nothing. Your mind's eye is still there. And that's something that can only be taken care of in the spiritual realm through spiritual surgery." So we need to be aware of the fact that hyperbole is one of the ways in which Jesus gets his points across. It is a way in which people have no difficulty understanding the importance of the message. If I just sat down with my friends and say, "Wow, I'm hungry." Well, they understand that I'm hungry. If I sat down and said, "Man, I could eat a horse, I'm so hungry," they understand that I am really hungry and I plan on eating a lot. Now, Jesus was not advocating self-mutilation, as some people erroneously believe, because they rip context. They take it right out of context. They take the context and throw it away. They just look at the verse and they say, "Well, I'm taking it literally." No, you're not taking it literally. You're taking it literalistically. There's a huge difference. We need to approach the Bible in determining to understand it literally, not literalistically. What is the meaning? What is the literal meaning? That's what we're after. So he was not advocating self-mutilation. Now, Jesus moves into another area that Jewish people especially were affected by. Because remember, Jesus came and he said on a number of occasions that I've come to the lost house of Israel. His ministry was mainly to the lost house of Israel, the Jewish people. Now, when it was determined that they rejected him, then he began to broaden the scope of his ministry, and he commissioned his disciples and those who would come after them to reach the entire world. But it was only after the Jews rejected him. Now, he says this, which is really interesting. In the same chapter, chapter 5 of Matthew and verse 38, he says this. You've heard that it said, and I'm paraphrasing, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist evil. Do not. But whoever will hit thee on the right cheek, turn to him the other. And if any man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have your cloak also. And whoever will compel thee to go a mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks, and from him that would borrow, do not turn him away. Unquote. Okay. Now notice this section here. He begins. Jesus begins by pointing out that what everyone already knew. Okay. Everyone was familiar with the idea that if someone does something bad or terrible to you, you have a right, and it is expected of you to do the same back to them. Someone kills your prized goat, you have a right to kill their prized goat. Someone kills your servant, you have a right to kill their servant, etc., etc. That was the way life was lived in those days. And unfortunately, in many cultures today, it's still lived that way. So we have examples even in modern quote-unquote times. Now, Jesus is offering, though, a strategy that the people would ultimately be not only shocked to hear, but really unwilling to do. And it's like, what? What is he telling us? He's telling if somebody slaps me on the face, I should turn to him the other side of my face? What is that about? Come on, Jesus, I don't want to be a doormat. What are you telling me? Well, he is basically saying a number of things. He is saying, look, instead of looking for retribution or vengeance, don't respond that way. Do something completely unexpected. And I want to caution you here, because he is not talking about defending yourself against criminal behavior. That is two separate issues. It's another issue completely, and you'll see what I'm talking about in just a minute. He is talking about something that occurred routinely within the Roman Empire, and it was law. He is not talking about if you're walking along the street and someone comes up to you with a gun and says, give me your money. Well, in that case, you probably should obey, and chances are, hopefully, they won't shoot you. But the reality, he is not talking here about, how to respond to criminal behavior. He is talking about, as we'll see, how to respond to legal things that took place within the Roman Empire. Now, during the time of Jesus, Rome controlled Jerusalem. I'm sure you know that from your history. The city and its inhabitants were under their care, but more importantly, they were under their control. So what does that have to do with anything, right? Well, it is because Rome dictated things to people who lived in the Roman Empire. There were just these certain rules and laws that applied to every person in Rome, unless they were Roman soldiers, legislators, or otherwise somehow within the ranks of the government or very important people. If you were the average citizen, there were certain things that would be expected of you, that could be asked, not even asked, demanded of you, and you had no choice. And it was within the bounds of the confines of Roman law. We see this in action. During the road leading up to the death of Christ, for instance, as he's going along the road, carrying his crossbeam, and it wasn't an entire cross, it was just the crossbeam. Maybe we'll get into that one day, along with the Shroud of Turin. We'll discuss that. But as he was going along what they call the Via Dolorosa, from his flogging to the place where he was going to be crucified, it was about a mile, they believe, and he's carrying this heavy crossbeam. Well, he's been up all night. He's been beaten to a pulp. He's had a crown of thorns put on his head. There's been tremendous blood loss, and he's had no sleep, no food, no water, and he's expected to carry this crossbeam. Well, as he's going along the way, he trips and he falls under the weight of it. So what do the Romans do? Well, they're not going to carry it. So what do? They grab the first person they see who looks like he's strong enough to carry the crossbeam, and they command him. They make him, they force him to carry the cross. His name was Simon, and Could Simon say, no, no thanks, man, I don't want to do this. Hey, it's not my death I'm marching to. He had no choice. If he refused, he could be thrown in jail for refusing the order of a Roman soldier. That's not criminal behavior. He would have been a criminal had he decided to not obey. So he had no choice but to carry the cross. Now imagine Simon. Here you are. You know, you're visiting Jerusalem because it's the Passover season. There are thousands and thousands upon thousands of additional people here who were not normally in Jerusalem, but they're here because of the Passover. And so you're watching this thing going on, and you're, what is this all about? And you're seeing these three criminals, one of them Jesus, on their way to be crucified. So out of curiosity, you're watching. Well, you happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time because you get tapped to carry Jesus' crossbeam. Now imagine Simon. He's not guilty of anything, but all of a sudden he's being viewed as a criminal. He is on his way, as far as the people are concerned, to the death, his own death. They don't know any better unless they happen to see the thing take place where the Roman soldiers said, no, you're going to carry this. But on your way to death, I mean, it was common for people to jeer at you, to laugh at you, to spit on you. I mean, you're going to your death. The Romans didn't care. They probably encouraged it. So here's Simon having to deal with that stuff. But here's an example of how one person was forced to do something he didn't necessarily want to do simply because he was commanded to do so by a Roman soldier. So you get the point? The point is that if a Roman soldier told you to drop and give him 20, you're going to drop and give him 20. That's the reality. So by the same token, if a Roman soldier got tired of carrying his heavy pack, he doesn't feel like carrying it anymore, and you're there, he could very easily grab you on the shoulder and command that you carry his pack. And by law, Roman law, you would have to carry that backpack for 1 mile. 1 mile, okay? So here you are. You're frustrated, you're angry, but you don't let it show. Because if you let it show, you could be slapped across the cheek. So you don't let it show. You just carry the pack, you put up with it, and you're counting down the steps until that mile's over. And because people walked all the time in and around Jerusalem and the Roman Empire, they knew what a mile was. There was no guesswork. Today, we would have no clue. We'd have to carry a pedometer, but then they knew. So here you are, you're counting the steps. Man, that mile can't get here soon enough. As soon as that mile is up, you drop the pack without so much as a goodbye, you're on your way. Because they cannot force you to carry it 2 miles, only one. They could grab someone else and say, okay, now you carry my backpack. All right, so imagine yourself a Jewish person in the Roman Empire. And you're sitting there minding your own business, and all of a sudden you feel a rough hand on your shoulder. You turn to see two Roman soldiers grinning at you, one holding his backpack up to your face. You know what it means. You got to carry it a mile. So that's what you do. Now, maybe in another instance, you wind up not moving out of a Roman soldier's way fast enough. Because of that, maybe he slaps you with an open hand. And that's the way they would slap an average citizen. Now you have to understand, Roman soldiers, of course, as I'm sure you know, were trained for one thing, to fight and kill. That was what they were trained for. They fought until the other person was dead. Now that's the way they dealt with it in battle. And if they had to do hand-to-hand combat, it was always with a closed fist until they can get to a weapon. It was never with an open fist. It was never with an open hand or a slap. That was reserved for people who were less than they were, who were not as valuable as they were. It's like in the Roman times, that's the way a father might treat, you know, a child, a slap across the face or a slap across the bottom. That's the way the Roman soldiers dealt with the average citizen if they wanted to get them to do something or if they didn't move fast enough or whatever. It was an open slap across the face. It was a sign that said, I am demeaning you. I am making sure you realize that you have absolutely no dignity as far as I, a Roman soldier, am concerned. You are nothing to me. And my open hand slap across your face proves it. Okay? That's what the people of Jesus' time were dealing with. That's exactly what they were dealing with. Now, we don't deal with that today. We don't walk along the street and have some law enforcement official come up to us and simply demand we carry something. We would laugh at them. We would like, what? If a police officer came up to us and slapped us across the face, and I know of no police officer that would do that, and I have tremendous respect for police officers and sheriffs, they have a tough job. But I know of no one personally who would do that. And if they did, what would happen to them? They would be, at the very least, put on administrative leave, reprimanded, and possibly fired. And the person who received the slap could sue them. It doesn't happen in our society. Now, in Roman society, it happened. And there was absolutely nothing that you could do about it. Nothing. And, you know, we have to understand that Roman soldiers were often sadists, too. They enjoyed inflicting pain. I think we are going to talk about the crucifixion process and the Shroud of Turin one of these days, but not today. We'll talk a little bit more about how sadistic Roman soldiers were. But this is the way Roman soldiers dealt with the average citizen in the Roman Empire, or non-citizen. Didn't really make any difference. If you were in their way, they were going to make you know about it. If they wanted you to do something, they made you know about it, and you had no recourse but to do it. That's the way they did it, and their purpose was to embarrass you. Their purpose was to remind you of your status in society, which, as far as they were concerned, was nothing. They were far above you. They were superior, and they would not let an opportunity go by in which they didn't remind you of that. Now, we get back to Jesus here when he talks about turning the other cheek and going the extra mile, etc., etc., and now we have a context to understand his words. That's what we need to do. When you read the Bible, you need to understand the context, which is why often you need to go outside the Bible to understand the culture of Jesus' time, because the Bible does not give you, in all cases, a clear picture of what the culture was like. There's a lot that the Bible does not say because it was simply assumed that the reader would understand. And of course, the reader of the first century and before would understand. But we're 2,000 years removed from the day of Jesus. All right, now with this background in place, how do we understand Jesus' words to turn the other cheek? Or if someone forces you to go a mile, go with him too. Well, remember, each of those things, slapping a person across the face, forcing them to carry a backpack, was designed to remind them of their low status, to embarrass them, to take away any dignity that they might feel that they had. Jesus is really saying here, look, I know what the situation is like here in the Roman Empire. I know that often Roman soldiers will, by law, force you to carry their pack a mile, will do something that they totally do not expect. Carry it a second mile. You make the decision on your own to carry that backpack an extra mile all by yourself. Well, what do you think the Roman soldier would do? Well, at the very worst, at the very least, he might think this person's crazy, or they don't know when a mile's up, or they're going to be a little bit shocked that you would decide on your own to carry it an extra mile. And you know what else? They may even begin to start having some respect for you because they realize that this is something you did on your own, knowing full well that the law only required you to carry it a mile. So Jesus is saying, look, I realize that there are parts of the law that govern the way you need to act. But you know what? You can take things into your own control and go an extra mile and make a statement about your own dignity, about your own self-worth. Remember, God loves us. This is why Jesus came into the world to begin with, because he sees value in us. Sometimes we overinflate our own value, but Jesus understands our true value. And he understands the situation that the Jews of his time lived under. Now, regarding a slap on the face, how does that work? Well, kind of the same way. Remember I said when a Roman soldier slapped an average citizen, they would do it with an open hand? Okay, what happens when they hit you? They're going to use maybe their right hand and they're going to slap you on your left cheek. That forces your cheek to turn to the right. Well, before they even have time to think about it, turn to them your right cheek. And what do they have to do? Well, now they're going to have to come back and now they're going to hit you with the back of their hand or a closed fist. And if they're going to hit you with a closed fist, you know what you're, you know what they're saying to you? You are my equal. You are forcing them to say, I have dignity. You cannot treat me like chattel, like a piece of furniture, like a slave. I am not your slave. See, what Jesus was really saying was, look, don't resist evil in the way that you normally think you want to resist it. Go with evil. And the Roman soldiers were evil in the sense that they were sadistic and they wanted to embarrass people and take away their dignity, even though it was Roman law. So Jesus is not advocating, you know, disobedience, civil disobedience by disobeying the law. He's saying work within the law and regain your dignity. It's extremely important to understand what he's saying. Now imagine the Roman soldier's surprise when you turn to him the other cheek, and he has no choice but to, unless he wants to start all over again, bring his hand back and it's a closed fist. He's not going to hit you. And it's going to make him think about something. That's what he's going to do. Now we have to remember that Jesus was saying, look, I'm a Christian. Do I need to roll over and play dead when the world says, you're dead? When the world says jump, I need to say how high? Uh-uh. I don't have to be a doormat for the world. And again, I want to emphasize that Jesus here is not talking about a response to criminal behavior. Someone breaks into your home. They have a gun. You have every right to protect yourself. Someone is trying to rape your wife, you know, God forbid. You have every right to do what you can to protect her and yourself. But we're going to talk about that next time. For right now, we're talking about what it means to be a Christian in society and turn the other cheek. You know, go the extra mile. What does that mean? What does it mean for us? We do not live in the same situation that the Jews lived during the Roman Empire. We live in a completely different situation, but now we can at least understand the context that Jesus was not saying, roll over, play dead, because you're all just wimps, and I'm going to create in you the ability to be a doormat so that everybody can walk all over you. If somebody walks in your house and says, I need food, and I'm taking it, don't do anything. He's not saying that. He is not saying that. People do not expect Christians to ever get upset. They don't expect Christians to ever get angry righteously. They don't. And when we do, what's the first thing that we're called? Hypocrites. Well, the first thing I do is point them to Jesus. When he got angry, he made a whip and he overturned the money changers' tables in the temple. He wasn't nice about it. He was not nice about it. We'll talk about that in the future as well. But here what we're doing is we need to understand the context. And Jesus is trying to help the people of his time. His ministry was to Jewish people, but we can gain from it as well. Now, he was trying to help them live a better life and feel better about the constraints they lived under with the Roman Empire. Now, we have a democratic society today, especially here in the United States, in Canada, and other countries. We're not in the position of having to carry a police officer's pack. We're not in the position of having to worry about being hit on one side of the face and having no recourse. This was not true during Christ's day. So again, Christians in America, we don't have to worry about a police officer or someone legally coming up to us and forcing us to carry a backpack. It doesn't work like that anymore. We're not talking, again, about criminal behavior that is being perpetrated against you. We're not. It's completely different. What the Roman soldiers did was inside the law. What a criminal does is outside the law. And what we're going to do next time is, and by the way, I really appreciate you joining me, but our half hour is almost gone. So what we're going to do next time is talk a little bit more about this in relation to a response to criminal behavior. What does it mean? What do we do? What's our recourse under the laws? Thanks for joining me.
Demons in disguise. Nephilim nightmare. Politics, Islam, and the end times. Interpreting the Bible literally. The pre-trib rapture. These are just some of the books written by Dr. Fred DeRuvo, host of Study Grow Know on AM 950 K-High. Whether it's the tribulation, the rapture, politics, Islam, or the end times itself, Dr. Fred DeRuvo offers his conservative and biblical perspective on these and other subjects. Look for his books on Amazon.com or at StudyGrowKnow.com. Thanks for listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join me every Saturday at noon, right here on AM 950 K-Hive, a voice of the foothills.